Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, it's me, Mike. I run the Sonar Podcast Network, the very one you're listening to right now. I love podcasting and I love the Canadian podcast community. And if you're a podcaster, work in podcasting, or just someone who loves podcasts, you're going to want to listen up. I'm proud to announce that I've been working very hard behind the scenes on an incredible podcasting event in Toronto on June 6th, the Soundwave Summit 2024. And as a Sonar listener, you get 15% off on all tickets with the code SONAR15. An awesome group of podcast companies and creators have banded together to create a space for podcasters and fans to build community, share knowledge, and celebrate indie productions. There will be a ton of informative sessions all day, including talks from Canada Land, Vocal Fry, Black Canadian Creators, Lead Podcasting, and of course, from us, the Sonar Network. In the evening, there will be a showcase of live podcast recordings from Blacklantic, Squirrel Talk, and the Women of Ill Repute. And it's all emceed by the amazingly talented and Survivor-winningest host of Happy to See Me podcast, Erica Kostupinen. Join us for insightful workshops on podcasting, networking with industry pros, drinks, and overall amazing opportunities to meet and collaborate with like-minded podcast lovers. Come for the sessions in the day, the live podcast showcase at night, or better yet, come for the whole thing. Tickets are going fast, so get them now at thesoundwavesummit.com. And don't forget to use the code SONAR15 for 15% off all tickets. That's SONAR15. See you there.
Ghosts! Ghostbusters! We face a ghost! We're others, we're not! We're ghosts! Ghostbusters! Stay in the kitchen when the kitchen gets hot! Ghosts!
Welcome to Ghost Facers. Today, Comic-Con, we are talking about Season 9, Episode Number 4, a Felicia Day episode. What?
Yeah.
Slumber Party.
Woo!
Yeah, who here likes Felicia Day? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And how many Supernatural fans do we have out there? Oh, yeah. Supernatural pajamas. What?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Whoa, Castiel and Sam? You need to choose a side.
Yeah.
This isn't okay.
No, I think it's fine.
No, we're going to address this.
We're going to sort this out. Yeah.
We are joined today by an incredible guest, a good friend of ours. You may know them from the TV show Ghosts or the podcast Spooked. Please welcome Cody Crane.
Yeah. I like when you asked who likes Supernatural in the room or who likes Felicia Day, and we got a really big so-so down there in the audience. Like, yeah. Just so like, nah.
But like emphatically, I'm okay with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fine.
We are talking, of course, about Supernatural. We are now, how many people here got past season 5 and are like, have watched the whole series? Oh, yeah, great. Oh, yeah, love that. Yeah, you never know, right? With so many people, get up to season 5 and then they end off. Cody, what is your experience with Supernatural? I know you're not like a gigantic fan or anything.
Yeah, I mainly know Supernatural as the show that my roommate blasts at like 8 a.m.
That's a weird time.
Wakes up, puts it on, rewatches it. I think he's rewatched it like 5 times.
Yeah.
Really, he should be here.
Yeah, do you have his number?
Yeah, I'll get him in here. But absolutely loves it. The other like thing that I noticed with this episode was Supernatural was actually like the first big thing I booked.
Oh!
And I got completely cut from the episode.
No!
And it's the episode after this. Because
no,
I went,
no, are you serious?
I went to shower for it. It's in the vet office. I was in the vet office.
What?
And, yeah, it's the episode after this one. I went to shower and I came back and the scene was playing of the one I was cut out of.
That's so weird.
That's amazing.
But that's the only episode I truly know because the others are just in passing or just hearing. It's a loud show. I don't know if you know this. This is a loud show for 8 a.m. So the other thing is just noise is what I know from it.
It's just a lot of gunshots and...
yeah. Sammy.
Yeah, I guess it's weird to hear gunshots and like low-toned voices at 8 a.m., but...
Yeah.
But I think that you're definitely aware of the supernatural world. Of course, you have a podcast, Spooked.
Yeah.
And are, of course, a believer.
I'm a big ghost believer. Yes.
Here's my question, though. Does it extend beyond ghosts? Do you have beliefs in any other...
Religious. Let's talk about it.
No, yeah. What religion?
Let's talk about the one true religion. Let's all...
what other paranormal thing? Like, do you believe in werewolves? Do you believe in, like,
no.
Lamias or, like, any, like, crazy monsters or things like that?
Werewolves?
Chupacabra?
Werewolves? No. Lycans? Yes. No, I'm not, like, I believe in, like, ghost energies, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a religious person either. I did, there's another podcast on, like, the network and stuff. I guested on that. That's, like, an atheist podcast. I came on as an atheist ghost believer, and I got absolutely destroyed in the comments of this video. Like, holy shit, did atheists not like that I was a ghost believer?
Right, yeah.
It was like, I'm on your side other than the ghost part.
I mean, it is funny that... I mean, this show really tackles that, right? Which is like, okay, if then this, right? And so the show is so much about, well, if ghosts, then does that mean the rest? And so, and they sort of explore that. But I do love that concept of like, if without like a religious piece, what does, how does that still work within a scientific world, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite sort of concepts is when it's actually about energy and you're actually seeing like either into like another like parallel worlds.
Sure.
That's just like bleeding through. Like that's the stuff that I really like.
Oh, you're speaking my language. I like comic books. So, and you say parallel earths and I'm in.
Those are the types of things where it's like, yeah, leftover energy and things like that. And that's the reason why it's like maybe from like a very specific time frame or maybe you're looking through time a little bit.
Right.
Time's a flat circle. So.
Sure. I believe in vampires.
Just only.
Only.
Yeah.
Not werewolves.
Any based on anything specific or?
Nope. Just that I think I'd be a good vampire.
Oh, what kind of vampire would you be?
Probably.
You clearly thought about this.
I'd be like the recluse kind. I'd be like in the dusty mansion that hasn't been looked after.
Yeah.
I think that kind of vampire.
Would you feed on people?
I mean, I guess only if they got like lost on their way to a different trip. And they had to stop to use the phone or something. And be like, please, yes, come in.
Weird that you put on the voice, though.
Nothing weird going on here.
Classic
sign. Forgive me, usually the house is less dusty.
Yeah. I'll just clean up while you're around. I just Glade freshener, it's fine.
I love how tenuously your hold on this accent.
It's not great. Let's end it now before I do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Slumber Party. I am so excited about this episode. We are now, 2013 is when this episode came out. October 29th, 2013. Clearly we know what you were doing. We were doing this show, apparently.
Yeah.
There's no proof, but it did happen.
Yeah, but it was there.
This episode was written by Robbie Thompson.
Yep. Smooth.
Yes.
The guy that wrote Smooth.
Yeah. The guy that wrote Smooth obviously wrote this episode as well. And directed by the one and only Robert Singer.
Yeah.
Legendary Supernatural director. We love him so much. TV Guide describes this episode as Sam and Dean meet Dorothy from Oz and the Wicked Witch when they locate an ancient computer in the Men of Letters house that dislodges a hidden hex bag. That's not what happens. That in turn unleashes a magical green web wall. Nope. Dorothy became trapped in the web years ago. Nope. To stop the witch from finding the key. Nope. That would open the gate connected to their world to Oz. That's not what happens. It was a bottle. Yeah. The web was sort of like just magic from that witch.
But this is my favorite kind of TV guide synopsis, where it's like heavily detailed and wrong.
That's kind of my whole vibe.
It's sort of the best version of it, where you're like, wow, I'm not even sure I need to watch the show. And then you sit down and watch it and go like, is this the right? I love it.
Notoriously, TV Guide, still obviously very relevant in this day and age. How many people are checking their TV guides for what's coming on this week?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that really shows the age we are doing this podcast, that we made a segment out of talking about the TV Guide.
Oh, no.
Truly out of touch.
I don't like that. But we are talking about The Wizard of Oz, and I would love to go a little bit deeper. Why don't we open up Dad's Journal and learn out some of the real-world lore?
Let's see what the lore says about The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, which is the original title.
HBO series where...
That's a different... Oz is a different show.
Oh.
Not the same.
That's not?
Deeply troubling.
Uh-oh. Yeah. I think I watched the wrong episode.
The Wonderful Wizard of Oz was published in 1900 by L. Frank Baum, and it was reprinted and republished a bunch as just The Wizard of Oz, because that was the name of the early 20th century Broadway adaptation, and then, of course, the movie with Judy Garland and all of, like, everything most people and most of us glean from The Wizard of Oz is from that movie. It's so iconic, and like the black and white to Technicolor transition was such like a technical thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's really beloved, but there is like a series of books basically about The Wizard of Oz.
He did a real Dune thing, didn't he? And he released the books and then just kept going in the universe even though people weren't asking for it.
I mean, it's slightly different from Dune, because with Dune, he wrote it and then he was like, people got the wrong lesson from this. I'm going to write another book and I'll nail it this time.
Oh,
and then
okay.
And then he was like, he becomes a worm. He kind of like, you know. Wizard of Oz, it was just like, more adventures in this kind of like wonderful world. But the interesting thing, you know, we heard it like this year with Mickey Mouse or Steamboat Willie, rather. Things are starting to move into the public domain, you know, like Superman and Batman will be there. In
Winnie the Pooh's in there.
Know, Winnie the Pooh's in there. Like, these things are coming up, but like those things are also from a long time ago. The Wizard of Oz has been in the public domain since 1956.
Which means that...
Not the movie version, of course. There's, like, trademarked things in there, but, like, the story. But that's why there's... Wicked, which started as a novel, is... You get to write that because it's in the public domain, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So now there's all these, like, other versions of things, or interpreting, like, the prehistory of the story, because it's been in the public domain for so long. Who here likes Wicked? Anyone? Wicked fans? Are you going to go see the movie?
No.
Wow. This is what I mean. Why would you make it 20 years late?
I mean, truly, yeah, with the wrong cast.
But you can always just, they remount it in theater all the time, like live.
That's
like,
true.
You can see it there. Why would you, it's not like you can't, it's not accessible to people or whatever. Like, it's just constantly, like, a Toronto production pops up or, like, anywhere, you know?
And Hamilton has proven that, like, we just want to watch the theater.
Yeah, it's true. So the first printing of Wizard of Oz sold 10,000 copies. It's been called America's greatest and best-loved homegrown fairy tale. It's in the Library of Congress. It's, like, maybe one of the most beloved 20th century stories ever.
But it's a lot, not a lot different, but it's different than what we got in the movie. It's definitely a lot more, like, edgier.
It was written in 1900. You could only be so edgy. But I'll say this is my editorial thing.
Yeah.
Considering that there are lots of books, I kind of feel like there's not a lot in The Wizard of Oz.
And what do you mean?
Like, I'm a Lord of the Rings guy. Every page is like 1,000 years of, like, and this guy's name is this because this guy's name was that.
And, like, that, you think that makes that better?
Yeah. What, you mean people like reading story, not like history?
Yeah, people don't want to do math to figure out what happened in a book. Yeah.
Well, that's crazy.
The Wizard of Oz is simplistic. We know the lion's cowardly. What more do we need?
Exactly.
Why is he cowardly?
Yeah, where did it come from? What happened 6 centuries ago that made him cowardly?
No, I think he's cowardly in the way that like Reginald Vell Johnson is cowardly in Die Hard, where he's like, I shot a kid. I don't know if I can get back out there again.
I was the king of the jungle.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, is that everything that we know about Wizard of Oz?
I'm just dropping that in there because what we're doing in the show is so different, and so much of the show's take on it is like, it's not the book.
I think everyone in the room right now was waiting for you to bring up the Great and Powerful movie starring James Franco, too.
I think
that everyone was on the edge of their seats.
Did anyone see that one?
The preeminent.
No. Did anybody like that one? It was okay.
You're the only person that said okay. Everyone else looked like they were ashamed that they watched it.
I do love the positive energy that you're trying to bring to a movie people hate. Sure. Sure. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Green is good.
Was Mila Kunis the witch in that? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. It just keeps getting worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I'd never brought it up.
Funnily enough, this show, Supernatural, is also not riffing on Oz the Great and the Powerful.
Yeah. We were blessed with that.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you feel like you're tackling 1,000 things at once but never really making any progress? Are you just looking at a calendar of responsibilities and no time for you? Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you could do more of it. You know, one of the things that people think about therapy is that it's only for a time of crisis, and that's not true. It's just to find tools and processes and an approach to help you just live your life in a more healthy and balanced way. If you want to make things just a little bit easier or have someone to talk to, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's much easier to fit into any schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ghostfacers today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ghostfacers. And now back to the show.
Well, let's talk about what it was doing by getting into the episode.
Oh, nice. Good transition.
Yeah, so was that good? Was that a good transition?
Loved it.
Oh my God, thank God I'm sweating. So the scene opens in black and white inside the Men of Letters. How perfect, black and white, like Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
I know. It's like they were doing something artistic.
I know. I like when they do that. A pair of hands opens a lockbox and retrieves a key. Two men, one young and one older, descends the stairs with a briefcase handcuffed to their wrists. Each man sits at a different desk, unlocks their handcuff, and retrieves an old-fashioned light bulb from their case. I love the pageantry of this. That's like right up my alley. Turning the great levers of time.
Yes, yeah.
I'm such a big fan of that kind of stuff. Extra steps.
And I like a process that like we have to do this in sync or something. Like
both
turn the key or something like that. Like I like those kind of things.
So they plug their bulbs into separate boards, causing the bulbs to light up. Both men meet and shake hands, introducing themselves as James Haggerty and Peter Jenkins. Peter Jenkins.
Yeah.
Peter expresses, this is old, that's also an old reference now, which is hurtful.
I know.
Peter expresses concern about whether they can execute their tasks correctly, and because the lights haven't come up yet, and they're, and one guy clearly is like, "This is the most magical place ever. I'm so happy to be in this bunker."
Well, it's. I was just going to jump in to say, like, we're obviously in the bunker in 1935.
Yeah.
But as someone kind of like hopping in and out, like when you were filming, were you in the bunker ever? On that set?
No, I was only in the vet office.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, like I didn't have anything to do with anything. No one was there. I was alone.
I was alone. I don't even think there was cameras.
Yeah. I don't think anyone was filming it. Yeah, I think I walked on the set, actually.
I'm on Supernatural.
I think I just saw catering.
where I'm going with this, though, is it, like, more alienating to, like, open, and it's not the main actors that you know are in the show. It's now black and white. We're in the 30s, and you're in a set that is meaningless to you. Because I do think, like, the show is, like, they don't go, like, oh, here we are in the Men of Letters. Like, they don't do any of that stuff. They just go, this is the most wonderful place in the world. We go, like, yeah, we know that.
Yeah.
We're here.
Yeah. You don't have to explain that to us. James refers to the bunker dismissively as a dump, prompting Peter to passionately defend it as crucial stronghold in the battle against good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
We are fighting.
It's cool.
I love it.
I do like that stuff.
The scene transitions to 6 months later. Peter and James are now playing chess in the bunker. And I always love a good smash cut where it's just like, this place is the most magical. And immediately it's like, this place sucks. Like whenever you do like a flash forward and the other guy's caught up now, he's like, yeah, this place does suck.
It's such like a classic TV and movie trope. It's like, I'm not going to do it. And then you cut to them doing whatever the thing is.
Classic. Yeah. Peter laments the lack of excitement in their assignment, while James warns that adventure is undesirable. The Men of Letters don't want adventure. They want to just be little book boys.
Yeah, what's your take on the idea of, like, what the show has, like, been setting up is that there's hunters who do, like, the grunt work of going out and finding monsters and killing them. And then there's these, like, elitist academics that are like, we know how to kill them, but I guess you could turn to your hands and do it. It's sort of like, I don't know if that like exists in other kind of like spooky literature or like corners or whatever. I really like that idea though. There's something that I really latch on to there.
I felt like watching this that this was the perfect episode for me to jump in on and know the show inside and out.
Yeah.
Like as a starting point, I was like, yes. Season 9?
Season 9.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole hunter, ghost hunting thing, like, have you ever gone down that road of watching those ghost hunting shows and stuff like that?
Yeah, I've definitely watched those before. And, I mean...
But, like, Linda Blair YTV 1999 episodes are, like, some of my favorite, like, supernatural hunting shows.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, the people who know, I just hit hard.
Oh, okay.
It was good. But all those, like we're going to go into the oldest haunted place in America.
I always liked the ones that were, like, I watched, like, Celebrity Ghost Hunter or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. And every episode, you would get into it, like, oh, I wonder what celebrity's insane today.
Oh, the celebrity is the ghost hunter? I thought they were hunting celebrity ghosts.
No, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that would be good.
Today we're going to take down F. Scott Fitzgerald.
it would be weird ones where it was like, I remember watching one where they just basically take the celebrity, listen to their ghost story, and go to the spot where they saw a ghost. Right. And the one I remember the most was Michael Madsen from Reservoir Dogs. And he's just like in this hotel where I think he was saying he was like pushed down the stairs and he's just explaining and showing the stairs he would push down.
I love that.
That's great.
So the
that
phone
makes for good TV, too. Yeah.
The phone rings. James answers with extension 765, following protocols to verify the caller. And they learn that they have a visitor, Frank's kid.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Peter and James.
L. Frank Baum.
That's right. It's like Smaug.
Well, yeah, I might be overselling. It might just be Baum. It might just be Bum.
Dorothy, dragging a large bag, comes in, introduces herself, and requests their help killing a witch.
Yeah, killing the witch.
That's right. Yeah. The Wicked Witch of the West.
I really like her, like Amelia Earhart. Kind of,
I mean,
like
yeah.
aesthetic, like the costume and stuff like that. I really dig that. I think it's pretty cool.
Her whole vibe very much works.
Yeah, 100%. It's also like, you know, this isn't your grandpa's Wizard of Oz because she's like, I cut out the witch's tongue.
Yeah.
She's like,
which I do like that. I like that they sort of,
it's
like
pretty,
supernatural.
It's pretty intense, yeah.
That's our cold open, baby, which means we're now heading into the modern times. Scene opens with Crowley sitting in the dungeon, hearing the sounds of shelves moving and seeing Sam approach. Crowley sarcastically greets Sam, expecting another request of demon names.
Hello, boys.
I do love this approach that they've realized that if you just give Crowley time, then he'll come up with some way to like screw with you.
It's the best kind of version of them being smart at their jobs and torturing like a talky devil that wants to make deals with that. You just like leave him alone with his thoughts. And it's great.
He's like, hey, actually, where are you going?
Cody, have you ever like crossed paths with Mark Shepard in any of your projects? Or anything like that?
No. Is that who's Crowley?
Yeah, no. Classic genre British actor in Doom Patrol and
yeah.
Love that. Mark, who loves Mark Shepard here? Crowley. You met him in Ottawa. Oh. That's all I've ever heard about him. He's super, super nice. And he's like awesome. Tatted up too.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah.
I like him a lot. So Sam sets a piece of paper and a black crayon in front of Crowley, who then expresses the desire for better accommodations, which Sam will not do.
So what's been... Right, because they want more demon names. They're trying to hunt all the demons.
Yeah,
Crowley's
yeah.
like, no, like, let me stretch my legs or whatever. Sam just leaves him alone again, which is great. And like just in the dark. And then, like, it's funny in this episode, we check in with Crowley a couple of times, but it doesn't really go anywhere.
No, it's not for any real purpose. It's just...
It's kind of just like... We like putting him in these episodes. Like,
yes.
That's sort of the feeling of it, because like, it doesn't really affect anything, right?
I kind of felt like that was maybe setting up for something in the future was what I was justifying it with. But does it not? It's just nothing?
Oh, no. I mean, like, he is part of it. Like,
they captured him.
The story of him being captured and them, like, dealing with him keeps going. But I just mean, like...
I guess it's just like...
In the context of the witch and that, like, it doesn't really go anywhere.
It's like a remember he's here. They could have put the witch in there. She's going through every vent in that show.
Well, she does walk in for, like, a split second and sort of, like, he hands her a piece of paper and...
It did
But it doesn't really do anything from it.
It did sort of make me think, this is because I'm a comic book fan, that... It would have been neat for the bunker to have like a monster prison, like the Pipeline and the Flash. They just keep jamming like fictional characters and stuff into these boxes.
They get bigger sins that they have to bring to them.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like that. So they transition to Sam working at the map as Dean enters, and he's like, "We need to take a break." He's like, "I brought the first season of Game of Thrones."
Yeah, that's a weird little. Like touch point in this episode too,
for no real reason except for like it doesn't have any connection. There's no real purpose for it. I do like that they just want to watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Sam discusses a potential method to help Castiel, but of course those who've been watching know that right now inside of Sam is another angel that like pops up occasionally, but Sam has no idea.
Another
way that we really screwed over Cody.
Because we just dropped you in cold. Like, how far into the episode were you before you were like, why do his eyes keep glowing?
I accepted everything as like, that's a thing that's this show. Like,
yeah.
I was like, yeah, I guess that's just his thing.
Yeah, yeah. He's the guy that glows and becomes a different guy.
Yeah, it took me one time to be like, his eyes glow. accepted.
Yeah, fair enough.
But what's confusing is that now Dean's worried because they kicked their buddy out of the bunker because he's going to bring danger to this other angel that's inside of Sam. But the problem is that Sam doesn't know that, and so he's trying to get the guy back, and he's like, why is this guy not coming back? Like, let's get our buddy back here. And Dean has to pretend like he doesn't know. It's not good.
A classic Dean lying sort of plot line.
Absolutely. Yeah. The brothers can't tell each other something.
No, I'm doing this for your own good.
Yeah. The scene shifts to a room housing an ancient computer, puzzling Sam and Dean with its warmth and apparent lack of power source. And they're like, we can use this computer maybe to find, because they went crazy when the angels fell.
I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but like when we get to it in the later scene, a thing that I love in this show is they're like, this old computer, obviously technology, runs on magic. And you go, what? And they go, we don't know what kind. And then they also go, hey, computer hacker, can you hack magic? And she's like, yes. And she's putting wires into things and just like jamming it together. She goes, I'm pretty good at the internet. I'm sure I can figure out magic. She's kind of like hooks up their system.
It's a way hacking works.
I love the logic leap of that so much. It's like the difference between like Ludacris and Too Fast, Too Furious, and then him like hacking NORAD in the later like movies.
He was a mechanic. Obviously, he's the greatest hacker in the world.
He's a mechanic and therefore can do anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we then we knock over a bottle of some mysterious liquid. We don't know what's going to happen to it. Yeah. That pours all over the floor. It's going to come back later. But before we see that, we flash back to the 1930s once again with Jenkins and Haggerty, and now Dorothy in the Men of Letters bunkers discussing how to deal with this captured wicked witch. I do love that they're having this conversation about what to do with her, and then they just cut to her, and she's just like, like sitting at the table with them. Yeah. Just like, I don't know what to do with her. I don't know. And then she's just like, witch. Like,
yeah.
Very, very funny. But the Sheen, and they're just like, there's no way to kill her. There's
she's
nothing
not green.
We can do. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I guess we don't know. It's black and white.
Fair.
I assume she's not green.
The scene shifts back to the present where Sam and Dean are asking for Charlie's help to obviously hack the magic computer. When Charlie examines this computer, she says, sweet Ada Lovelace. For those who don't know, Ada Lovelace is an early 19th century British countess and mathematician who worked on the prototype computer, the first ever concept of a computer, the analytical engine. We all love Ada Lovelace, right? Yeah,
I know who Ada Lovelace is. Did you not?
I did. But what are you being presumptive?
Oh, it's crazy that you didn't know that.
Oh, no. Am I going to get canceled? Charlie connects her laptop to the ancient computer and figures out how to get all of the Men of Letters files, which
this is
also
what
a thing
I
that
need.
Doesn't actually come back up again.
How do you even hack that?
Also, how does it have files?
Yeah.
Like, I understand that,
inside
like...
inside that old computer, I think you should, like, punch some buttons to pull up a file, and then an actual envelope should come up. It should be like the... Like the old bat computer from the Adam West.
Yeah, you
West
put in
Batman,
the phone book.
Push a whole phone book in, it just spits out the one phone number that you need. Yeah.
We get back to another flashback in the dangerous confrontation between the 1930s bunker involving Jenkins, Haggerty, and the Wicked Witch. She got loose.
Classic.
She's converting the guys to being her followers, and there's a huge fight and battle that turns in.
Can I throw a thing out there?
Please.
You can tell me if you like this pitch. I'm going to try to punch up this element of her powers.
Okay.
So in this episode, the Wicked Witch does like mentally dominate some people. Like take them over.
That's a dream.
Puppet them. Easy. I wanted them to turn into flying monkeys.
What?
That like take control of them and then turn into the flying monkeys that are like the Wicked Witch.
You're saying that's
thing.
What happens to you when you...
No, I just think, like, why not put one more layer of, like, a monster-y transformation and another Wizard of Oz thing in there?
I was just upset that they weren't going, oh, we, oh.
Well, this is what I'm talking about.
I think that the direct punch-up, because that sounds expensive. What you're talking about sounds
expensive. That's the man who makes television.
I'm a real pie-in-the-sky kind of producer.
As the producer of this show now,
okay.
I'm saying... Okay, let's think about something else here.
Let's try a different idea.
No, but it's that idea or I walk.
Since she's coming to Sam and Dean, that the logical thing would be to, for this episode, and I don't know if I just didn't pick it up that they did this, but that they would represent the Scarecrow, the Lion, or the Tin Man. Like, their character traits would represent that throughout the episode. Like, and especially with we get a point where I'm bad with their names, but I think it's Sam can revive people, but it takes a lot out of them.
It's the angel inside of him, but yes.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so...
You idiot.
God damn it! So that was almost like... you understand where he's coming from, but it's almost like a heartless move, so for him to not have a heart would have been like the logical thing there, right? And then maybe...
This is why you work in television.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, just spitballing here.
Yeah, we all got ideas. We're just, you know.
Yeah.
I like that idea. That would have been actually, damn it.
And it's inexpensive's the best part, and that's what we're talking about in TV right now.
Yeah, sure.
We want to make money here.
I just want a bunch of people to spend 5 hours in makeup.
Yeah, that's Like, makeup, CGI, let's go.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, too, that the witch's powers here, unnecessary. She is already physically dominating them. Like,
That's true.
She backhands them across the room.
Yeah.
There's no reason for her to even need magic at this point.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
What?
That's a fair point.
Like, she has everything over them.
Yeah, that's not... Yeah, no, 100% that's true. So Charlie and Dean are examining Men of Letters case folders about Dorothy and the Wicked Witch, and they learn that Dorothy and the witch were trapped together in the bunker. The trio then goes downstairs to find that the bottle that knocked over has now created this hole in the wall in which tumbles out the one and only Dorothy.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was in the web of ambiguous color.
Yes. The web of ambiguous color.
Yeah. And I like those things where, like, people have been frozen in time or whatever, and then they show up and they'd be like, do we still do things the cool way or whatever? And they go like, ugh, you can't help me, blah, blah, blah. Like,
tell me what happened in the fast food wars.
They have to slowly learn like what the future is like.
But where's your three seashells?
But the crazy thing about this is that Sam and Dean are living in the past by being in the bunker. Like,
oh yeah.
Dorothy doesn't really get to see the future.
For as far as she knows, it's still present time.
All the computers are old. All the it's not like she's walking around and be like, what's a segue? Or like there's nothing. That would be the number one thing.
Obviously. That's how we see them all the time.
But I just think it's funny that you basically do Austin Powers or Demolition Man or whatever, but it's like, oh no, it's exactly how I left it.
Yeah, except for Dean kept saying everything's groovy, but
yeah.
Otherwise it was all completely different. Yeah. Once Dorothy acclimates to her situation, she reveals herself indeed to be the Dorothy from the one and only Wizard of Oz books, not the movie. Very specific.
The books, yeah.
The time traveler explains how she trapped the witch in the bottle for years, though both have clearly now escaped. Sam engages Dorothy in a conversation attempting to gather more information about her past as a witch, or with the witch, and Dorothy reveals that she used a binding spell to trap herself as well as the witch together for decades.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, the witch is now infiltrating the dungeon.
Just a little criticism of the binding spell. It should be stronger than a regular glass jar.
I was thinking this
If you're using arcane blood magic, it should take more than what? to undo it.
Yeah, it wasn't even a broke open or anything. They just knocked over.
It just knocked over and then the lid, the little cork popped off.
Pretty porous, a cork. It is weird that they just left it in the same spot, too.
Yeah.
She put it in there. The guy came in and was like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's where they are, I think. And then just leaves it there.
Yeah, when we flash back to when she does that, we don't get the sense that he's like, oh, where are they? Or that he jar is what it is. Or put a little, danger, do not open.
Yeah, no.
You know, if it's in the fridge, be like, this is my lunch. Don't.
Yeah. Contains witch. Don't eat
my
lunch.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, now the Wicked Witch finds Crowley.
Oh, hello, boys.
Hello, witch.
Witch. Yeah.
I do love I wish that there actually was more reason for those two to be together, because the witch... And it is weird that he immediately knows who it is.
I think the problem is that this is two episodes in a row where someone comes into where Crowley is being held, and you feel like Crowley is going to use it to his advantage, and then nothing changes about his situation. He's still there. He's still trapped. He's not. He doesn't have a better hand to play. It's two episodes in a row where it's like, Nah, I guess it's fine. Like, we can just go in and visit the devil, and it's fine.
Yeah. I do like that she walks up to him, but she also is somehow warded against whatever this magic is, so she can't even get to him to help.
She gets
shocked or whatever. Crowley tries to communicate with her and throws her that same marker and piece of paper that he was given, and it's just like, let me help you. What are you looking for?
Yeah.
She writes down key.
Yeah.
So back in the computer room, Dorothy expresses urgency to finding the witch before she locates a mysterious item that she's been looking for, which we now know is the key. Charlie and Dorothy prepare to confront the witch using bullets laced with poppy extract. I do love, there's a great Felicia Day moment. She walks in, she's just like, read the lore, baby. Yeah. Poppies.
Well, yeah, because she's accessed all the files from the old computer.
Yeah.
New computer via her magic modem.
Obviously. I hope she put it on a magic extendable hard drive.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, it's like, what, a megabit?
I do like it, though. You know, they've been making, like, crazy bullets and that, or, like, etching devil's traps.
Totally.
I like when they sort of MacGyver new weapons to fight monsters.
Yes.
Like, I'm into that kind of thing. Just in general, in, like, fiction, I like when they're like, we took holy water and I put it in a bomb. And
yeah.
Like, cool. Yeah, that's good. I like it.
Modernized.
It doesn't always just have to be like in a flask. Like, you don't, like, you could have some ingenuity.
I like it. It's just like,
well, that's always what it looks like in like exorcism movies. Like, trying to get that.
It's like, get a better system.
Like a super soaker.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, right?
That's what you want. Just like blast.
If they do a sequel to The Pope's Exorcist, I think he should have a super soaker.
You love that movie.
I really do.
I love that movie.
I really love that movie.
That's my favorite movie of last year. The Pope's Exorcist. Yeah. It's a buddy cop movie with two priests doing an exorcist.
That's what I love.
Oh, my God. The accent's amazing.
I love when he goes in front of like the tribunal. Sorry, this is a slight tangent. Russell Crowe goes in front of the tribunal of cardinals, and they basically go like, you're a loose cannon. You're gun and your badge.
They're like, you're crossing your collar on my desk.
We will not be going back to Supernatural now.
Charlie and Dorothy prepare to confront the witch by using these bullets. Says Sam and Dean patrol the bunker, and Crowley reveals the witch's interest in the key, leading to a frenetic search. I like that he also, doesn't even try to like hide the information. He's just like, she's looking for the key.
I think that's the other thing. It doesn't feel like Crowley's playing much of a game. Like we're sort of losing the master manipulator kind of piece there. Every time we have him in a scene in this episode for some reason.
Yeah, I kind of just didn't know who he was. He just didn't do anything.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you would, because he's large. He's totally inconsequential, actually, in the episode.
Totally.
You know.
Dorothy explains that the key can then now open a portal to Oz. I do like that there's a few different ways to go into Oz. You can do it through a hurricane, but there's also just a key.
He's like, yeah, I'll use the key then.
Yeah. You don't want to do the tornado?
No.
You want to go fly through an eye of a hurricane? No, that's not something. I guess you can use the key. So during this conversation, Charlie intervenes to save Dean from a magic attack, and Dean is left distraught as Charlie lies unconscious, potentially gravely injured from her.
I think she's dead.
Oh, yeah.
She's dead.
She got done zapped.
Yeah. She gets like, it's like a Avada Kedavra. She's like, there's a green flash of magic, and she's just dead.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah. This is where he enlists Ezekiel, the angel inside Sam.
Right.
To bring her back. Here, a little context, too. Ezekiel is inside Sam because he's healing Sam.
But how'd he get in there?
Well, because they tricked them.
It's actually
pretty problematic.
Yeah. It's not great. Let's not look too closely at it.
I took her as dead and accepted that she was dead for the rest of time. I didn't think that...
Oh, boy. Welcome to Supernatural. I got news for you. Sam and Dean at this point have each chalked up like four deaths.
Yeah. Four?
Each.
Mystery spot.
No, you're right. Mystery spot. Yeah, like 1,700.
It's a lot more.
I forgot about mystery spot.
But Ezekiel comes and saves Charlie.
Yeah.
And Sam doesn't remember what happened, but he did hear Dean call for Zeke.
Call him Zeke, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, what is
that? Dean's bad at lying.
Yeah, he's not great at
Sam's
it.
Sam's always like, Dean, everything okay? And he's like, yeah, why wouldn't it be?
But Charlie and Dorothy then experience a conversation about their bond over dying. And I do love that Dorothy's just like an old school hunter. She's just like, what? You're not a real hunter till you've died.
I mean, and that's true. And that's even Dorothy being like, hey, are you just tuning into the show? This happens a lot.
But Dorothy and Charlie strategize about using a magical item potentially from Oz against the witch, following sort of her father's footsteps. And those books can actually be used as a thing to teach them how to kill the witch. At the same time, the witch possesses Dean and Sam.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, look.
I do kind of like them as sort of, we're here for the key, like kind of.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yes, I like that because it works in the show.
Yeah, I like it because of how it works.
Yes.
It anyway. Works for me and the show.
Anyway.
So the witch reveals her plan to bring all of her armies into this new world that she wants to take over. Charlie and Dorothy arrive at the Men of Letters garage, which we find that's the first time we get to see the Men of Letters garage. There's another room in this building.
Yeah, that's their spinoff, like History Channel like, show, oh, Men of Letters garage.
Like Jay's garage?
Yeah.
We're looking at this magic 1924 broom. I don't know.
Nice.
With magic transportation. I've lost it.
Yeah, it's good, man.
It's a Nimbus 2000.
Boo.
They retrieve the two ruby red slippers from Dorothy's old vehicle. An important thing to point here. In the books, which they're supposed to be following, the slippers weren't ruby. They're actually silver.
Yeah, true. But even Dorothy's like, the books don't count. Unless they do, but not always.
Yeah. Both the boys manage to overpower the girls, but Charlie incapacitates Dean by kicking him into the groin.
I just want to watch Lodge one more, like, punch up.
Yeah.
They should have forged the high heels into more bullets. Instead of just hitting with the heels, they should have just like, or just rip the heel off and load it into the gun.
I mean, that would have been pretty good. There's a guy I watch on TikTok that tries to take like an airsoft gun and turn it into lethal, and he slowly makes tiny adjustments.
Oh no, it's pretty. That feels good. Like it needs to get reported.
But he still has a foam button, foam bullet, and at one point he's just like. All right, the bullet's probably the problem here. Is he like just puts like a tack on it, and then he's like, "No, that's not going to be enough."
I feel like you're on a watch list now.
Yeah. Well, a new one.
Yeah.
So with the threat abated and the key possession, after we kill the witch using the ruby red slipper,
yeah,
just right in the back of the head.
Not even water.
No.
Also, you know, my dad made up stuff in the books. Well, that's Dorothy's whole
thing. Sure, yeah, yeah. We now have been able to get the key. We've killed the witch. And we closed the door so that Oz cannot come through. And Charlie now has to say goodbye. And she's met a new wonderful lady, and she's looking for adventure, and she doesn't know what to do next. God, this scene.
I do like this. She decides to go to Oz.
She goes to Oz!
It's cool. It's a nice little send-off
I know that's a crazy idea to, like, spin off a Supernatural character into their own show. No, they've never tried that.
Yeah.
But that's one that I would actually watch. Maybe not the Chicago one. But that's one that I actually would totally watch. But, yeah, that's the end of this episode. Cody, what did you think about this episode? And can you give it a ranking out of 5?
Ooh, ranking out of 5? I'll give it a... I did tell my roommate I watched this one.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's... bad one to
watch. What? No!
but I'd give it like a... I'll give it a 3. I'll give it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
And I'm bumping it up because I like the witch going vent to vent.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
As a classic vent man yourself.
As a classic vent man, you know, I like vent-based entertainment.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm a big Die Hard fan for that reason.
Sure, yeah.
I love vent-based entertainment.
You need relatable content. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, like, whoa, what a writing technique. As soon as she's in trouble, go back in the vent. And then come back somewhere else and still the same danger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I love this episode so much. I love the Dorothy thing. I love bringing in a different type of like supernatural thing and like, oh, it's like they, oh, like literary worlds are part of this now too, right? So I think I might give this a 5. I really like this episode.
You're giving this a 5.
Yeah.
I'm right.
Maybe it's just the slave Dean and Sam, but
is anyone else in here giving this a 5?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, fives, right? It's a 5.
I'm right in the middle. I like this episode a lot, but it's just it misses some marks. You know, the Crowley stuff doesn't make
sense.
Sure,
yeah.
And like I really hate that they didn't make high heel bullets. So I think I'm going to give this I'll give it 4 witch vents out of 5. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, those are our reviews. Cody, thank you so much for coming on this podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Tell people where they can find you online.
Yeah, you can follow me at CoCrane on Instagram, as well as at Spooked Podcast if you want to check out my podcast.
Great Spooked podcast.
And this coming Thursday, I'm pretty sure I'm in this episode of Ghost on CBS and Global again.
One of my favorite shows. Yeah. Love Ghosts. Nice. Well, that is it for us. You can find us all if you want to pull out your phones and follow us on all the social medias.
We are Ghostfacers Pod and Ghostfacers Podcast when you're looking it up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to us.
And thank you so much for coming.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.
Sonar!